are in Newport, Rhode Island this morning, but it seems like there may be there's about to be a mutiny on the Bounty. Obscure reference. If you take Evan Lazar from Patriots.com.
Great car reference in there. Very apropos.
What?
The Ferrari.
Yeah.
Yep.
So if you take him at his word, that is what he said on a podcast last night, which is no longer available.
Need more.
We heard from Jelani Tavai. He says that's not the case. Any nuggets that you got?
Massive. I mean, in the beginning of the season, the way he talked about Jacoby Brissett in that situation was so different than the Jelani Tavai we heard today. In the beginning of the season, he was so pro Jacoby, is speaking about how it's Jacoby's job, and you know Drake May has a lot to learn, and blah blah blah. To hear that today and not give that resounding support behind Jacoby to kind of say, oh, no, I just focus on the defense.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a reason why I think, as is normally the case in Twitch, I think I was called an idiot when I asked Jerod Mayo what the plan was.
That's hurtful.
Why do I expect that we need to know the plan? Why do I expect that players need to know the plan? This is a reason why, if you shared that plan. Jerod Mayo said on our show, he speaks to his players through the media. He said on Monday, one of the reasons why I do this show and do other things is so that, because the players are aware, they listen, they hear things.
All right.
So if he told them the plan and they understood the plan, then maybe there would be guys who wouldn't think that Drake May is not playing purely because he might get hurt.
But this is what I said last week. I said Jerod Mayo is encouraging, tacitly or outwardly, his coaches and players to publicly praise Drake May.
Oh, he's doing it himself.
And now he's doing it. But I'm saying, but this mutiny is not against Mayo. It's against the plan that is being thrown down their throats.
So it's a mutiny against Elliott Wolf.
Yes.
They don't know what the plan is. I can guarantee that. I can guarantee those players don't know. They're probably all sitting there going like, they're competing for an opportunity with Drake May and Jacoby Brissett. Maybe they gave it to Brissett because he has a little bit more familiarity with the offense. But now they're probably seeing, why isn't Drake May playing? Like, Mayo's not going down there on a Monday and an 8 o'clock meeting going, okay, here's how we're going to do this, guys. For the first 8 weeks, we're not going to play Drake May because of X, Y, and Z. Like, they don't know. They're just looking at a guy who's getting reps in practice.
Looks good.
And they're saying...
And he doesn't have to go out there every week and maybe get hurt like they do.
And they're saying, we're probably saying...
And he gives us the best chance to win.
Yeah, that's what they're saying more than anything. Yeah. Why isn't this guy out there helping us win?
This is Rich from... By the way, we'll do the news coming up at 8:20, and then Jay Leno will... A huge car guy like Wiggy will join us here at the Audrain Automobile Museum about 8:45. This is Rich from Springfield. Rich, good morning.
Hey, Greg, I got a nugget out of the Tavai interview there.
Yes.
He was using words like accountability and selflessness, right? Those are Bill Belichick terms. Yeah. And no, I know, but Bill Belichick used those words often. So I think he wants to see more accountability from Mayo. And, I mean, there's no accountability if Ramondre Stevenson is fumbling the ball 4 weeks in a row and nothing's happening. But can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Can I will a Patriots win this weekend? So here's what I'm going to do. I want to donate $1,250 to the Greg Hill Foundation, no matter what, this weekend.
Wow.
If they win, I'll double it to $2,500.
Mm.
Okay. If Drake May starts and they win, I'll donate $5,000.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
Good job. Good job.
Yeah, round of applause. That's awesome.
Good job, big dog. Right.
I want to will it. So let's on Tuesday I'll write the check.
Awesome.
If they win and Drake May starts, it's $5,000. If they, no matter what, it's $1,250. All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Oh, that's awesome.
I mean, this is a winnable football game.
Oh yeah.
I mean, Miami is without Tua.
Yep.
And struggling at that position, and that Tyreek Hill was pissed last week, and so I mean, this is a football game that you can win, and that maybe that changes things when it comes to a teetering on a mutiny.
But see, here's why I said with my lead, I'm happy, because if you lose this football game,
you get Drake May next week.
I mean, aren't we? How long can Mayo keep using the excuse of the plan, especially now with these whispers. And you know, you heard Tavai. The one thing I heard Tavai say is, guys not doing the little things. Guys not watching enough film. Guys not taking care of their body. That means because they're on a losing team where they're probably going in, doing what they got to do and getting the hell out of there. And they're like, for what? Where are we going? And if there's no, as a player, it's the same way as a fan, right? And I think a lot of people don't understand this. As players, if we don't have the same type of aspirations as far as what we're like, where our team is going, then we're like fans. We check out too. We go in, we do our job, and we get in and we get the hell out of there. We try to stay healthy. And I think that's kind of what he's saying. Guys are like, and before it gets too far where it's like, now you're 1-8, and now it's just you're like looking at the end of the schedule.
Yeah. This is Pauly from Dedham. Pauly, what's up?
Hey, good morning, gang, Greg.
Hey.
I like the coaching scheme here, I believe, was what's going on. It's Drake May is about 80, 90% there. Let's say closer to 90, about 90% there, ready to go. He's right there. They would have been ready to put him in, I would say, in the second half of that football game with Brissett missing open receivers, them not being able to move the ball that well with only 3 points to show on the scoreboard by the end of the half. If that defense had played sound, fundamental football, he's not going to leave them hanging. If they're taking the coaching and they're doing what he says, they're keeping them tight in games, they were probably looking to move May in a close game in the second half early, but they were playing selfishly, and they were down 20-3 at the half. So he's not going to act desperate and say, oh, go in there, Drake, and save us, because that ain't going to happen. He's going to be running around back there with like a chicken with his head cut off because of that porous offensive line, and the only thing you're going to accomplish is maybe getting them hurt or may have them losing confidence.
Okay. That defense Thank you. Curtis is getting frustrated with you.
I mean, they're going to bring him in fourth quarter down by a field goal with 2 minutes left. When has that ever happened outside of last year when they were in Germany and they quit?
If they lose this game against Miami, do you think he starts in Houston the following week?
It's home.
At home, yeah, but against Houston?
Yes. I mean, I don't know how – I agree with you, Greg.
I don't.
They're out of options in terms of the excuses have run the gamut.
But what was the plan? You don't know what
they – didn't have a plan. The plan was that Elliot Wolf did a horrible job with the funds not created by Robert Kraft in building a talented offense. They don't have an offensive line. So you draft a guy, and what we said with –
But Chaim said this morning in his lead that the offensive line is not the problem. Jacoby Brissett is the problem.
Right, but the
he's holding the football too long.
But let's say Caden Wallace?
Yes.
Okay, the right tackle at Penn State that's playing left tackle in the NFL as a rookie allows a guy off the edge that destroys Drake May's knee, gets him out for a year. Nobody's talking about Drake May. Nobody's talking about Jerod Mayo. They're all pointing at Elliot Wolf and Robert Kraft for not getting that offensive line in the right place.
Okay, also, why are we...
But the guy who got the majority of snaps this week at center is an undrafted free agent from your practice squad. Like, there is going to be a little bit of risk.
Right.
A little bit
right.
of risk.
No matter what.
But I'm old enough to remember when the Patriots had an offensive line where Ted Karras was your sixth lineman who could play center and guard, who would come in. The Patriots had professional wrestlers that were taught how to play the offensive line, like Stephen Neal by Dante Scarnecchia. They've been able to get through it because every team has injuries on the offensive line. It would be the exception to the rule if this line remained healthy, and they built the line like they had depth when they have none.
If you're concerned about your left tackle, just leave the tight end over there. Chip with the back going out. So if those are issues that bother you, have – you know what? Put Drake May in and go, you know what? We're going to dial up 7-8 man protections. And we're going to have 1 and 2 receiver routes that we're just going to try to take shots on. Or if you're concerned about that, hey, put Drake May in empty and say, we're running 3-step and get the ball out quick.
Yeah. And why would you take someone with a third pick in the draft who needed everything to be perfect around him?
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens on Sunday, and you can certainly talk about what you want to happen all day long here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. We're going to get to Courtney in today's news coming right up next from Newport, Rhode Island, with a whole bunch of incredible Newport people, Rhode Island people. You guys are extraordinary. We're blessed with, I say this all the time, blessed with the greatest, most attractive radio audience ever in the history of radio audiences. Mm-hmm. They have not, radio audiences, not that attractive in other parts of the country. No disrespect to them. But you people are fantastic.
Well,
so we're glad you're here. We're going to talk to Jay Leno coming up as well here at the Audrain Automobile Museum. But right now, Courtney, and what is trending this hour?
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Timeout Market Boston. The Falcons took down the Bucks last night in OT. Final score 36-30. Kirk Cousins completed 42 of 58 passes for 509 yards, four touchdowns, and an interception. And it'll be the Mets that are taking on the Phillies in the NLDS after a wild win over the Brewers last night. A Pete Alonso three-run homer in the ninth gave them the 4-2 win. And a former Sox leader is coming out of retirement. Terry Francona is set to return to the manager for the Reds. We do have an update on Rashee Rice as we continue into week five of play. He's been placed on IR with a knee injury and will be out for at least four games. We have the Patriots game on Sunday, 1 p.m. kickoff against the Dolphins at Gillette. And before that, tomorrow, BC at UVA at 1. You can listen to that right here on EEI. Quickly, no surprise here, Caitlin Clark wins the WNBA Rookie of the Year. She got 66 out of the 67 votes.
Who's the one person that didn't vote?
I know.
And just ahead, the BC is noon tomorrow.
What did I say?
What?
Oh.
All right.
My apologies.
At VA.
At VA. Yeah. Okay.
They're 1-point underdogs. The disrespect.
Well, I think scheduling BC for your homecoming game is a bit of disrespect.
Oh, well.
Philly-O, let's go.
Yep. All right. Experience the essence of Boston's culinary and cultural scene at Time Out Market Boston. Nestled in the Fenway, from live music sessions to food and beverage tastings and everything in between, Time Out Market Boston showcases the best of the city under one roof. That's what's trending. Here's Curtis with your weather.
Thank you, Courtney. 56 degrees back home. Going to be sunny in the low 70s this afternoon. Going to be very similar here in the lovely town. Is Newport a city or a town?
I believe it is a city, Curtis.
A lovely city. I hope Greg runs for mayor.
I think you have to be a resident.
I think you're about to move in. You were getting the MLS listing of that mansion last night.
I do like it down here. I got to tell you.
Yeah, it is beautiful.
I like a good garden party.
Greg's middle class here.
What did you think of the food? What did you think of the food at the garden
party? I thought the food was good. I got some of the what was it? The
sliders?
No, not the sliders.
Charcuterie?
The pumpkin raviolis.
Oh, I didn't have that.
I didn't take you as a pumpkin ravioli.
Well, yeah, there was a little like pasta station in the back.
Yeah. Yum.
Yeah.
Where they had some of that.
I saw a quick audible by the help. They rerouted the hors d'oeuvres away from Wiggy.
I didn't see the sliders.
The pigs in a blanket were pretty good.
A sweet ball, but I couldn't find the sliders.
Oh, and did you enjoy the Swedish meatball?
I did. Yeah, I did. I mean, I enjoyed all the food and the drink.
Yeah,
you know,
the sliders were right in the middle. They had gluten-free options.
Did they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I told you it was a cool little vibe over there, man. Yeah. I didn't know what to expect when I kind of first walked in.
It was great. It was awesome. All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and we will be back with today's news next. You can probably find a Chevrolet somewhere here at the Audrain Automobile Museum.
Oh yeah,
we got a Mercury 1950 Mercury behind us. If you're watching this show on Twitch, and you should be, or on YouTube, you can see that. But unbelievable vehicles. I want to thank everybody for having us here. I want to thank all you guys for being here this morning, which is awesome. Sometimes we say, hey, we're going to go do a road show, and you never know who's going to be there. But so thankful for you Newport people coming out. Jay Leno is going to join us in 10 or 15 minutes or so. We'll talk about his car collection, his involvement here with Newport and Audrain and all that stuff. Oh, he's walking in right now. I mean, I feel like, should we just get rid of the news and bring Jay Leno on?
Screw the news.
Come on over. Come on. My Lord. This is entertainment royalty in the room with us right now. Entertainment royalty.
Talking about Ken?
Yes, talking about Ken.
Ken's on a walk right now.
I don't know. What is going
on?
Ken is
emo.
On a walk?
I don't know.
Is he emo?
Yeah.
I've been looking
That's
for
That's kind of weird. Ladies and gentlemen, and yes, we'll get another one. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the great Jay Leno.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Jay,
yes.
Are any of your cars here?
No, I've had cars here, but no, none of mine are here now. No.
How many do you have now?
Oh, you sound like my wife. No, honey, I painted it. You remember this. No, I got 208 on the road. It's a little stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you drive them all? I mean,
Of course. See, yeah, of course you drive them all.
That's the point of having them.
Well, right? That's the point of having them. Yeah, exactly.
What was the first one that you got?
Well, you mean since I started collecting cars? Yeah, or was yeah. the kid? You know, I bought a 1932 Packard from Phil Hill. You know, the Phil Hill was a Packard mechanic before he was a world champion race car driver. And one of the best mechanics, you know, when he won the world champion, I think he's the only guy never damaged a car, never had an accident, was never injured in a car. He had the greatest mechanical sympathy. He's the kind of guy who could drive around and go, oh, you know something? I think the left bank is running a little low or whatever it might be. You know, I get in a car like, what's that flopping noise? Oh, that's a flat tire. Oh, geez. You know, but Phil could act. I mean, so when he raced the car, he could take it right to the limit. Other guys go out and, you know, they just manhandle it and they beat it up and the clutch blows, the transmission breaks, and they yell at the mechanics. All the mechanics, they all liked Phil because he understood how everything worked. He's quite a guy, and he was a real Renaissance guy. Loved classical music and photography, and, you know, he wasn't your typical, you know, womanizing boozer race car driver.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
No, he's a great guy. Great.
Yeah.
Guy.
And so you bought that Packard, and then you said, all right, I like this. I'm gonna see how many I can buy.
Well, no, not really. I didn't say, well, I like this. I got to get all the 32 Packards. No, it doesn't work like that. I mean, you sort of learn what is, you make some mistakes along the way, and then you sort of learn, oh, what's desirable. And you have to come to understand that it costs the same to restore a worthless car as it does a valuable car. So a lot of times people put a lot of money into something that's, you know, a four-door Bel Air. Well, that's not the desirable model. So to put 50, 60 grand into that, you're not going to get more than 17 or 18. But if you have the two-door sport model with the 327, oh, that's the one. See, you kind of learn, you know, how to collect them and which way to go.
Who has a better car collection, you or Jerry Seinfeld?
I don't know. I mean, it's different. Jerry is just a Porsche guy.
Right.
He's got a few other Mercedes. I like anything that rolls, explodes, makes noise. I just... In any other world, you would be a hoarder, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I watch Hoarders and I go, well, you still got a path to get to the kitchen. I mean, I don't see what's wrong with the guy. Well, he's crazy. No, but if, you know, if you're wealthy, you're eccentric. And you like, if you don't have money, then you're a hoarder and get out of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
When you have all those cars, do you have one, like your daily car, you know, your go-to to the grocery store?
You know, I've got a Model T, which is the greatest.
Do you think
car.
Jay Leno goes to the grocery
store? He strikes me as a grocery store guy.
Yeah.
If you look at my rear end, you can tell I go to the grocery store. Yeah.
What's your favorite car?
My favorite.
Yes.
I don't have a favorite. I wouldn't have all these cars.
All right.
Favorite.
So what's a car that you want that you don't have?
Oh, you know, I've kind of got everything. You know, you make mistakes along the way. I remember years ago I looked at a Voisin. You know, Voisin. That is a That is a French car. But it has what was known as a sleeve valve engine, which is an unusual type of. And they smoke a lot. They just smoke from the factory. But Voisin was a guy who was a contemporary of the Wright brothers, and they used to throw rocks at each other because Voisin said he was the first guy to fly a plane. Whereas the Wright brothers, a bunch of guys ran with a plane, threw it, and it literally went 300 feet and landed. Voisin was the first guy to stand next to a plane, pull the propeller, have it fire, get in the car, get in the plane, fly it around, and then land in the same place. So he considered himself the first pilot, whereas the Wright brothers, you know, some.
But he didn't get the credit for it, the Wright brothers.
Well, he did if you're in France.
Yeah.
You know? When you're American, you think Americans invented everything.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Well, Ford invented the car. No, we didn't invent the car. Yeah. You know, it's just that.
Well, Ford invented the assembly line, right?
Assembly line came from the meatpacking industry. Ford went to meatpack and saw the carcasses coming down the line and went, oh, you know, I bet we could do that with machinery. And Ransom E. Olds, the Oldsmobile guy, he was the first guy to have his cars built on assembly. Ford was just the first one to take it to the next, literally the next level. You know, just crazy. Yeah.
Who do you think from an American, you brought up America, who's the best American manufacturer right now of automobiles?
You know, they're all pretty good. I mean, the greatest thing that ever happened to Detroit was going bankrupt. Because what you have now is all engine. You don't have marketing. This is Bob from Whirlpool. He's going to be in charge of our performance division. And they put stripes and mag wheels, but it's nothing special. There's so many cars from the 60s. The Vega GT. Oh, my God, what a nightmare that was, you know. Whereas now, people a bit more sophisticated, and you have engineers running everything. You know, Mark Royce, the president of GM, he's at Nürburgring almost every weekend, just taking Cadillacs and Corvettes and trying to get the highest speed and the best braking. And so I think American cars are, well, the new ZR1 Corvette, it's 1,064 horsepower. And it's probably $150,000 to $175,000, which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
But when you compare it to the McLaren, the Ferrari of $2.5 million, you know, you could get 10 ZR1s for the price of a Pagani or one of those.
Yeah.
So I think American engineering is really, really good. Ford is good. I think third would be Stellantis. But I think it's between GM and Ford, as far as, and that just becomes personal, whatever you like.
Yeah.
Jay, the world of electric vehicles appears to be somewhat slowing. Where do you sit on the future of all of our cars not being gas-powered?
Well, you know, it's like smoking. You don't outlaw it. You'd like to say, we're banning internal. You just see where the market goes. Okay, now it is no longer acceptable to smoke. I see people in the old days, ooh, it's very sexy, there's cigarette smoke. And now you go, look at that. I don't want to kiss that ashtray. You know what I mean? So it's the same sort of thing. I mean, if you're not a person who's a car person, electric is the best thing ever. You plug it in every night. You got a full tank every morning. I mean, I have a Tesla, and it cost me, I think, $13 to fill it with almost $300 worth of, quote, fuel.
Hmm.
And a gas car, that'd be $100 or $80.
Yeah.
When I have to go to the airport or run into town, if I'm going to go to Vegas, I'm probably not going to take an electric car because I don't want to take the chance of, although the supercharging stations are pretty good, it's still 45 minutes you got to wait. So I would take a gas car. But I think that you can have both. That's what's great about America. You know? You know, I want to exercise, but I also like to smoke. What's like, you know? So,
it's yeah. By the way, it's jarring when you look back at old Tonight Show stuff and you see Johnny Carson smoking.
Oh yeah, Johnny. Like in the come back from commercial.
It's pretty wild.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Is it weird to you that like I was thinking about having you on and the monologue? You know, your monologue used to be what everybody would talk about. It's the way people consume entertainment and content has changed so much is, you know.
Not really. What's changed?
It's not like people wait up at 11:30 to watch The Tonight Show.
Oh, no.
People used to do that. Like it was,
well, you used to have appointment television.
Yeah.
First of all, you had people sitting in an empty room. Then the radio came in. Oh, you can get music anytime you want. Isn't that pretty good?
Yeah.
You know, and then television. Well, can you be home at 9 o'clock? Yeah, that's not a big deal. You know, so yeah, it's progress, but it's basically the same.
But I say it to these youngins that I work with,
yeah.
And I say, you, if you wanted to watch Jay Leno on The Tonight Show, you had to be up at 11:30 to watch it.
Well, for the last 20 years, you had VCRs and various recording devices. You could set your timer to watch it when you wanted from about mid-80s to now, so it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
Do you feel like, Jay, do you feel like there's a, because I was at the event last night, I can't remember who said it, like a lot of younger people getting into the cars, do you feel like you're starting to see that more of a movement now because you're seeing all these unique cars that are coming out, whether it's like, you know, when you start to look at some of these Bugattis and some of these fancier cars, the Dodge SRTs, the Challengers, the Hellcats. You feel like you're starting to see younger people now get into...
No, I think it's the exact opposite, actually. Yeah.
Really?
Younger people now, that I talk to teenagers, I'll probably get my license when I'm 21 or 22. I was one of those people, I was 15 and a half at the DMV waiting for the clock. Okay, come get my license now. You know, but kids don't really want to drive it. See, now, in my day, you had to go places in reality.
Mm-hmm.
Now you go places virtually. Like when I was a kid, you couldn't get a naked picture and while you're sitting at home, someone taking you. Maybe you had to get a camera, to take a picture.
Polaroid.
Find a drugstore that didn't know your parents to develop the film. You know, you go like two towns over to Boxford, you know, go to that guy. He doesn't know me. But you develop these pictures, and he gets the picture back. And they would have all the good parts would be covered with the black. Somebody else would censor the picture. Hilarious. But that's what it is now. You don't, you know, when I was a kid,
In Andover, right? You grew up
in Andover. Hilarious,
You had to go to the photomat to get your nudes processed.
No, not until you went to the drugstore. The photomat came later. That was a little fancy.
Much more effort for an unsolicited D-pick back then.
Exactly.
Jay, being from Andover, why are so many of the best comedians from the Northeast. What is it about growing up?
This is like the funniest place in the world. I remember when Dukakis was running for president back in the 80s. There was no nationwide seatbelt law. So he said Massachusetts should have a seatbelt law. And there were people selling T-shirts that had a fake seatbelt on them. So you'd buy the T-shirt and you'd drive, and if a cop saw you, it looked like you had a seatbelt on. And it said, protect freedom. And I was like, really? Really? Oh, that quirky New England, it just makes me laugh. It's just like the funniest, it's just the funniest place. Yeah.
Now we do that with the HOV lane. We put a baseball hat on the headrest.
Yeah. That, you get a dummy to ride it. You just go to any extent, you know, hilarious.
The Boston comedy scene, I always recommend it, but the film documentary when Stand Up Stood Out kind of tells that whole story of you and Dennis.
I never heard of that. What film?
You haven't? It's great. It's about the Ding Ho and
others. Well, I was working, here's your typical Boston story. It was the Comedy Connection, whatever it was.
Yeah.
It was upstairs. So I go on stage, and people are being seated while you're working. That's okay. And I hear it's kind of, hey, get on with that. I'm in front of a pole. Just sit down. Shut up. So they put this guy in front of a pole. He said nothing but complain. So I'm going along, and then I hear, what's that? And they drag the guy out. And I go, so I have to come on stage. What was that all about? A guy was... Hey, making a big fuss because he's in front of the pole. What happened? Billy stabbed him. Billy stabbed him in the leg.
Was that Billy Downs?
Pulled him out, gave him $20, put him in a cab, and sent him away. So I was like, really? Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay, 3 months later, I get a call from the comedy. Hey, Jay, remember Billy? Remember the bouncer that helped you? What do you mean? Remember that guy was... talking while you're on stage and Billy stabbed him. I said, you know, that didn't really help me. Anyway, he helped you. What's the problem? He goes, well, Billy killed a guy. Now the cops are hassling him. And I remember saying to him, do you think the cops would go after real criminals instead of guys like Billy? And the guy goes, yeah, I know, right. That's what I'm saying. I didn't see the irony in what I was talking about. Yeah, so that's what I loved about the Boston comedy. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Do you have time? I got to take a quick
break. I'm here. Where am I going?
All right, good. Because we're going to talk to Nick. You brought Nick with you. He's the chairman. We were at Wiggy brought up his place. We were at your house yesterday. One of them or whatever. Kind of a fixer-upper? Is that the place that we're at?
It's a fixer-upper.
Yeah. Needs a little work. That's your guest mansion that we were at yesterday.
That's the classic New England. What do you got, some fancy place? This is what I love. There's nothing more Boston than that. What do you go to have it? What do you have it?
What are you, rich?
What, think you're better than that Catholic school that you think? What do you got, a fixer-upper house there?
All right.
I love it. It's great. Just that Boston. It's great.
It's great. You miss it.
Yeah, I do miss it. It just makes me laugh. It's just just the funniest thing. I mean, when I lived in Andover, the guy a couple doors down from me, he heated his house with wood. He had a pump in the kitchen that went to a well because he wasn't going to pay taxes. I'm going to pay for the city water. I get my own water here. You know, it's like so much effort. What are you doing? But just think, you're hilarious. It's nothing more New England than that.
It's mass holes. Yeah, that's what we are.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. Yeah. And proud of it.
And proud of it.
Yeah.
All right. Jay Leno is here. We'll come back. We'll talk about what's going on here this week and all that stuff with Jay Leno. We will be right back.
You got some fancy...
Well, we are in Newport with Jay Leno at the Audrain Automobile Museum and Jay's friend Nick Schorsch, who is the chairman here at Audrain.
Well, not just the chairman. He's the guy that funds this whole thing.
He pays for the whole
thing.
Well,
you know...
That's the Boston way to say it.
He's paying for the whole thing. shut up. No, but he's a real enthusiast. It's supposed to be a money-making proposition, but I don't think it does because a lot of the exhibits are free and kids can walk through and go.
Yeah.
So he really is an enthusiast. I think that's why the museum is so successful because it attracts other enthusiasts, you know?
Yeah.
You know, he does a great job. It's really a class. It's hard to put one of these on because everybody's so suspicious, you know?
Yeah.
I wanted to tell you, I got the ultimate Boston compliment. This is only in Boston he gets this compliment.
Yeah.
I meet a guy, I go, hey, Jay Leno, how you doing? Hey, my friend met you in California. He said you're not an a-hole. I said, oh, well, thank you. He goes, no, really? He did. I said, well, thank you, man. I appreciate it. No, he said that. I said, well, thank you. And that's about as good as you're going to get.
That's what you'll get.
Well, this is an extraordinary place, so congratulations.
Yeah, it's a wonderful place.
And
the cool thing about it is, if you're not a car enthusiast, the wife's going, oh, we got another car thing. I mean, you're in Newport. There's stuff to do.
Yeah.
There's the mansions. There's the house tours. So there's all kinds of things here. You can bring the whole family down, and people can do what they want.
I was told by the guy who drove us over here today that you have a little shack here as well.
I do. Yeah. I have a little shack. That's right. Yeah.
How much time do you spend at that shack?
Well, not a whole lot.
It's one of many.
Yeah.
No, not many, really. But I like New England. Like I say, it just makes me laugh. It's just such a funny. Everybody's suspicious. Is he like a Hollywood jerk? You have to kind of ease into it. You can't come here with attitude.
You were telling us during the break what you thought the most Boston scene ever in a film was.
Well, actually, the greatest film about Boston is Good Will Hunting.
Yes.
Yep. You got a guy who is an intellectual, but just doesn't want to, is embarrassed by it.
Hates himself.
You know, he's got the roots. Because you have an intellectual entity. You got Cambridge, you got Harvard, you got MIT, and then you got everybody else. And the two of them, it's such a clash of cultures. And that's what makes it fun here. I really enjoy it, yeah.
But the scene you mentioned during the break, the most Boston scene ever, was from Ted.
Ted. Yeah, well, Ted, yeah. But that's just because the Boston accent to the rest of the world is the most grating accent. Yeah, it just makes me laugh, you know. Well, I mentioned it before. And Ted, this beautiful woman walks in, very French, and it's got some expensive gown from one of the couture houses, you know. So, and she's like, what are you?
You can't use the word. You can't use the word.
Yes.
Is that weird to you? Do you think, would it be tough to you? I know you do stand up every once in a while still, but would it be tough for you to do the Tonight stuff that you did on the Tonight Show now, or stuff that you did on stage,
because
of the environment and the...
There's no environment. You know something, please. Funny is fine. If it's really funny, all bets are off. Because you hear a joke about a taboo subject. If it's really funny, you go, that's really funny. A lot of times it's just not funny. It's just, it's more mean-spirited. It's more... And, you know, you go... It's like when I was a kid, women drivers were every comedian's basis for their act at some point.
Yeah.
And at some point, women just go, okay, now you've lost half the audience. Yeah, okay, so it's like smoking. It becomes acceptable, not acceptable. Racial jokes were as common, you know, people, Bob didn't mind. Oh, yeah, they mind. Everybody didn't mind. Oh, he didn't mind being a slave. No, of course not. You know, I mean, ultimately it's for the good. Does it swing sometimes too far to one way or the other? Yeah, but that's America. And it comes back to normal, you know.
Yeah. Who do you think is funny, like, now, stand-up?
You know something, it's such a hard business. Anybody that's making a living, I like. Mm. Anybody who writes their own material is not stealing jokes. I mean, there's different kinds of humor. It's like rap music and rock and roll. They're both music. It's music. Some guy, I hate rap. Well, I'm sorry, but it's just as valued as your whatever you like.
Dave Chappelle. I like Dave Chappelle. Eddie Murphy said he's going to do another tour. Do you think he'll ever do one?
You know, it's really hard because you can't leave comedy. If you leave, you're almost impossible to come back because Eddie hasn't been around doing stand-up for a long time. And then you show up somewhere to rehearse or practice. Oh, he sucked. I mean, well, yeah, it takes a long time to get... You need a joke
back into the, like,
every 6 to 9 seconds. You need a joke every 6 to 9 seconds. Just to keep it moving. It's like spinning plates on the Sullivan Show. You just got to keep it going. And to build up an act, because Eddie came back, I bet he's 10 times funnier than he was when I saw him. Well, no, it doesn't work that way.
Right.
Did you think the Brady roast was funny?
No.
Oh.
I mean, I thought, Nikki Glaser was great.
Great.
Because she was dirty, but funny.
Yeah.
They go, okay, all bets off. Everybody else seemed to be using obscenities, and so just for the sake of using obscenities. And that's why people, they go, well, that's why you... No, I thought Nikki Glaser was great, and she was as inappropriate as anybody,
But it was funny.
Yeah.
Everybody else just using the F word and, you know, just doing jokes about Brady's kids. And so I got to admit, I didn't like
it. Well, she's a comedian. You can't have former athletes trying to go up there and get in a world that they don't know nothing about.
Right. I get that.
There are other comedians, though.
You know, you got Gronk up there trying to tell jokes. No. Stick to the football.
I'm curious, Jay, that, you know, you talk a lot about coming back here.
Yeah.
What was the culture shock for you being from Andover to the total opposite in the West Coast? I find it very unsettling out there. It's just people are nice.
Well, it's just that. Well, the beach is on the wrong side, which screws up for the game. Keep walking into the town. No, the beach is that way. You know, that part is it. But just, yeah, like growing up in Boston, people are, Jay, this is my parents, Bob and Agnes. Now, how are you, Mr. and Mrs. Minicelli? Nice to meet you. I don't. People would introduce their parents by their first names.
Yeah.
And I would meet, like, grown men that played video games. My dad never played even. What do you have a video game? What the hell is this crap? But you see guys 50 years old waiting for, he got the new Fortnite? You know,
ooh, shine. That's a shot at you.
Yeah. Hilarious. Just funny.
Yeah.
That's Merrimack Valley, though, too, that no video games for an older generation.
Well, yeah, my dad did dad stuff, cut the lawn, fixed the house, you know, whatever.
What did your dad do for work?
My dad sold insurance, but my dad was a prize fighter.
Oh, wow.
That's what he did early, but then he told me he quit that because I thought this was pretty good. He said the reason he quit fighting was even on his best day at work, he still got punched in the face. Imagine going to work every day and you still get punched in the face. Every day. He said, no more of that. So he sold insurance.
Nick, what's your favorite vehicle that we see here today?
Actually, it's the white one here behind us.
Okay. Courtney loves that one.
That was my favorite.
It did so much. I mean, you have to realize that this, and Jay drives all these cars better than I do because he understands every little valve. But this car is 40 horsepower, which is about 500 horsepower in a today car.
Yeah.
It probably weighs, I don't know, Jay, 1,000 pounds, the Pinard.
Yeah, probably something like that.
And it was built for racing. So when they went out racing in it, it went from New York to Albany and actually made it. And you didn't have a mechanic or anything, so you had to jump off and change your tire. Or if you had, and you have to keep pumping the fuel to keep the pressure up.
Yeah.
I mean, you're actually part of the whole rhythm of that
code. Is stopping and going around corners. Yeah. You know, people just keep going, bang, and you hit a tree. You know? They only had brakes on the rear wheels, you know, all kinds of things.
No seat belts.
Right.
So you had to actually.
But you also tell people, like, what's your favorite car? If you can only have one car, well, it's not communist China. I can have as many cars as I want. No, you only have one. Who said I can only have one? That's New England when you have
one. Yes, 100%.
But this car is a piece of work to drive. It's fun. Unfortunately, it's not easy. But the funniest thing is if you drive this down the street, which we did during our veteran tour, we take these out every year and we have old cars pre-1907. It's called a veteran car tour like they do in England, which is called the London to Brighton race. We go Bristol to Newport and the American version. And it's amazing to see how many people come out to see these cars. The streets are lined up, and you could be driving a Lamborghini with pink polka dots and lit up on the bottom and a wing on the back and making a lot of noise. Nobody cares.
And this Mercedes, this is a $14 million automobile right here?
Probably. Maybe 20.
Maybe 20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very unusual car.
I heard a story about how Mercedes got its name.
Well, actually, it was a Benz, and there was a French car salesman named Emile Gelnick. He had a hard time selling German cars in France. Gee, I wonder why. The only people ever marched through the Arc de Triomphe were the Germans. Hey. The French never used it. We got no triumphs. Twice, World War I, World War II. So Gelnick said, I'll tell you what, I'll buy a bunch of Benzes if you let me name them after my daughter Mercedes, because that was a name that was pleasant and it didn't connotate war or anything. So then he had a picture of his daughter on the car. And so he said, okay, you can call your car Mercedes, because Ben just wanted to sell cars. So you can sell them in France. So it became Mercedes. It became so popular, eventually by 1924, they merged and became Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That is see, a wealth of knowledge. Can we have a round of applause for Jack?
Useless knowledge. Thank you.
All right.
When he's smart, when he go to school?
Craig, I
think you're smart, eh?
I know we don't have much time, and I know you don't like, you want to own a million cars, but if you had to pick.
I rest my case.
If you had to pick one.
That's Wiggy.
Yes. If you had to pick one decade.
He doesn't have everything. To. The man can own every
I know
car.
That, but literally just that to your head, you got to pick a decade of what?
Oh, a decade?
Yeah, like what decade?
Oh, probably the 60s, because I grew up in the 60s and that, the GTOs and the Cobras.
Okay.
See, the greatest year for me was 1966, because that was the last year you could design any car you wanted. By 67, bumpers, crash standards. You had to meet a certain standard. When you car like a Lamborghini Miura, you can never produce that today. That's a death trap.
Yeah.
But the idea was, it was cool and it looked good. That was the only car. Had to be cool and look good.
So you could make any car, put any engine in it. Didn't the safety standards were
there really were no safety standards. Remember their own seatbelt. Remember people wanted to be thrown clear. I want to be thrown clear in case of an accident. like the seatbelt. They're making me wear a seatbelt.
What was the when I was younger? Was it the Corvair that exploded whenever anybody hit the...
No, the Corvair.
That's Ralph Nader.
Explode.
He just made
That's
that
Ralph
up.
Nader made that up?
No. The Pinto was the one that...
The Ford Pinto.
The Corvair Pinto. Was unsafe by Ralph Nader. He had a whole book of the most unsafe cars.
Yeah.
We've attempted to buy every one.
Yeah.
And we now have every one of the Ralph Nader haters.
You do?
In the collection, Just because... The Corvair is an amazing car. It was designed to be a Porsche killer.
Yeah.
It's a good thing, because good things came out of Ralph Nader, too. I mean, you had safety standards. So it's a little bit of both. You got to take the good with the bad. Everything's never one thing or the other.
Nick, what's your favorite car in the collection other than that one? What's
in this
what's your favorite? Yeah. What's the number one?
Actually, it's the Asado Vercini over here, the black one.
Yeah.
It just came back from going through Europe and going to Concours.
Let's see if he was paying attention. Repeat the card that he just said.
Asado Vercini.
Okay.
Vercini operator.
It's the black one over there. But
Neil Parmesan was the car.
It's an Italian Cadillac at the time. Yeah. So it's a very finely built car, drives great. Drove it around the craziest cities, Lugano, Lake Como, these little tiny roads, Roman roads. The car was great. Took it on the highway.
Here's Bonsifoy. My dad used to call the Cadillac the Rolls-Royce of automobiles. I go, Pomp, it can't be the Rolls-Royce of automobiles. The Rolls-Royce. No, but the Cadillac, it's the Rolls-Royce of cars. No, it's...
The
Rolls-Royce is the Rolls-Royce car. You can never get it through his head.
My dream car was there last night, the Bronco. Are those safe?
The new ones, maybe.
Okay.
Not the old ones.
Yeah,
that
the new
is
ones
my dream
are safer.
Car.
But, I mean, you're sitting there, you got a steering column aimed directly at your chest. There's no airbag, there's no nothing. I mean, cars are pretty... I see cars now on the highway... crushed up at a ball. Dad, can you come get me? The car got wrecked. When I was a kid, 15 miles an hour, you hit a tree, you were dead. Literally.
Yeah.
Parking accidents. boom. But now, people roll cars.
They walk away from it.
If you drive a new Bronco today, it's a very fine car.
I love those.
And if you buy the sport one, it's a little rough.
And I always tell people, if you've got a teenager that's learning to drive, don't get them anything pre-2016, because you're not going to have the safety thing, you're not going to have the airbag. I want to get my kid a 65 Mustang. Well, it's a death trap. I mean, it's a wonderful car, and if you're mature enough to understand it, but you're not going to get any...
I was talking about that car the other day. I had that car. I had a 66 Mustang.
Yeah.
See, awesome car.
You got to hold on to it.
289 V8.
Right, there you go. That makes it even more dangerous.
Was that your...
It was. I wrecked it. I hit it in a snowstorm. The back slid on me when I was in high school.
I rest my case.
That's okay.
Thanks very much.
Do you have 10 more minutes?
I got 10 minutes.
Do you want Jay for another 10 minutes? Entertainment royalty.
That's right. Yeah.
All right. Okay. So we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
What are you, California now? How you think you got your fruits and your nuts out there, huh? Is that right? Yeah.
In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Busy roads, big trucks, bigger risks. Don't face it alone. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.